the National Archives podcast series, What's in it for Archives and Their Users? Panel discussion chaired by Patricia Methuen.
We heard from Google Culture Institute, who won't be reprising their offer this afternoon, that their offer was to help us assert the value of archives in our care. And despite, I think, some concerns about the suggestion that we might be treated as museums, none of us, I think, would argue against the significance of dissemination, effective discovery. We have three speakers who will provide other perspectives: Andrew Gray of Wikipedia, Bill Thompson of the BBC Digital Public Space, and Nick Poole of Europeana. Our speakers have been invited to explain their wares, to beguile us. Perhaps more of an electoral hustings than a panel, but we'll see. As a sector, as we know, no participation is free. What we need to understand is which of these offers give our users the best return for the investment in our time, and what is likely to be the best fit to our local dissemination strategies. All our speakers have been asked to speak for about 5 minutes to explain where they're coming from, what their offer is, and then we have lots of time to pick their brains and decide for ourselves. So, our first person I'm going to invite to the stump is Nick.
Hello, I come actually less to encourage you to participate in Europeana than to encourage you to take advantage of the full gamut of tools that are available at your disposal to open up and share your collections. I've been involved in this area of work, opening up, sharing collections and archival information online, for around 10 years. And during those 10 years, I think we've identified really three areas of benefit that we think are important or that we see people telling us matter. And those are very broadly benefits to your profession, benefits to your audiences, and political capital. And I just wanted to spend my 5 minutes exploring a little bit about what those benefits look like, and then considering that in most of our engagement with archives, with museums, with libraries, and indeed with galleries, it's the professional benefit, the how does it benefit me, how does it benefit my organisation, that is arguably the most critical. So the most fundamental part of that professional benefit focuses on the fact that it's ultimately our job. The impulse to gather, to refine, to organise, to share knowledge and information is encoded into the professional DNA of what archives and indeed the other sectors that I'm engaged in do. So much of the conversation we've had today and much of the conversations we've had previously about opening up and sharing collections through platforms like Europeana and the Google Cultural Institute is, I would argue, a logical extension of the day job into an era in which new tools and new use cases have emerged. I will always argue that as a community, we share most in common with the Commons community, which is why I'm looking very much forward to hearing from Andrew. Sharing data in this environment is a form of digital solidarity, and one of the most important use cases we see time and again in terms of opening up metadata descriptions of records and information is in finding each other, is in generating knowledge capital and in connecting the profession. So one of the aggregators for which I'm responsible, a platform called the Culture Grid, we originally secured funding for by lying that it was a public proposition. In fact, the vast majority of the usage of the Culture Grid as a direct proposition is by people in museums, libraries and archives as a way of finding each other and finding information about each other's collection. The other thing that's happened, though, is in the process of opening up collections and metadata online, we've put a use case in front of them, which supports then the advocacy case for why we continue to do our job. As we all know, there is precious little political and funder engagement with standards, with quality, with meta description, with cataloguing, with information management and knowledge generation. There is a tremendous interest in funding services which either deliver or seem to deliver public benefit and public capital. So what's happened is that we've used this generation of public propositions to articulate lots of benefit right back down the line in terms of what we do as a profession. So one of the things I always do when I'm talking to people about why they should get involved in Europeana is talk not about the destination, because in some ways the destination is the least defensible part of opening up collections, but to talk about what's happened in the wake of all of these initiatives in terms of putting a use case in front of the metadata, improving the quality of the metadata, and making a very clear argument for why we do all of the work that we do. Just accelerating slightly, for the public, opening up collections online is about much more than opening up collections online. I think it's very important to recognise that the discoverability of metadata, of digital libraries, digital records, is really only the beginning of a much bigger question, which is to do with the relevance of our respective sectors in the world that's emerging around us. The data we publish, the metadata we provide, is the token which buys us into the game in the way that the game is now played online. The quality of that token is what gives us its unique value, is what gives us our unique place in the emerging digital economy. But the real purpose of what we're doing here is to give end users the raw material within which they can explore their sense of agency, their sense of digital literacy, what it really means to be creating new forms of cultural capital and value in the way that people live digital lives now. Finally then, the political value of this whole domain of discourse is absolutely huge. We've heard a huge amount here and recently about the impact of cuts in public expenditure on culture. I'm not here to comment on that, but what I will say is that both in the UK and in Europe, we desperately need, and by we I mean archives, museums, libraries, galleries, and the other knowledge and memory institutions that I work with, we desperately need a new product. We need to articulate a new form of value with which to engage with the way that the political environment is today. So linked open data, sharing metadata openly so that it can be repurposed infinitely, whether it's through Europeana or the Google Cultural Institute or the Culture Grid or the BBC Digital Public Space or any number of other destinations, is that new product. It's exactly the critical thing that our sectors have to offer the domain of political discourse and the sphere of public behaviour in the way that the world is today. Finally, I would say that more than all of these things, this is about some very, very fundamental and very important principles. Opening up the public record for discovery, for reuse, is a fundamental aspect of democracy and of transparency. It's the way we hold governments to account, it's the way we hold corporations to account. So whether we're talking about Google or whether we're talking about Europeana doesn't really matter. What matters is that well-structured knowledge and information is robust and flows better in the digital domain in which we now operate. And so the unique value of what our sectors bring, the driving seat position that you're in, is your ability to articulate a unique form of value and then to take advantage of all of these platforms in the way that best fits the model of success that's relevant to your organisation and your audiences.
I'm going to apologise here, as I am fundamentally an imposter. I'm a librarian, not an archivist by profession. So what I'm going to talk about is both Wikipedia, but also the broader platform of projects that represents and the community that represents. So first of all, these sorts of partnerships aren't zero-sum. While it is a case that an institution works with a partner, puts resources into that, gets material out there, the nature of open collaboration means that other projects can later pick this up, later reuse it in innovative ways, not necessarily with a direct investment from yourselves at that stage. So I don't think we need to be quite as rival as it might initially seem. Wikipedia offers, first and foremost, an audience. The readership of Wikipedia is something like 7% of the world's population in any given month. We have a readership that is just shy of 500 million people. It's quite a scary number. And that immense scale and the way in which it handles material makes it a very unconventional aggregator of content from cultural institutions. We pull material in from everywhere. We pull material in from conventional, traditional publication. We pull material in from non-conventional online publication. We pull material in from digitized assets all over the world. We aggregate it. It goes through some kind of a human sits there and works at it, and you get something out. So it's not working on quite the same level as something like Culture Grid or Europeana. There is that level of human interaction. And while readers are taking this in, they're taking this processed, human-used form, we're driving them actively back to the sources. One of the things that Wikipedia has been trying very, very hard to do is ensure that readers don't stay on our site a minute longer than they want to. We have no impetus and no desire to keep them there if they want to go elsewhere. We're trying very hard to drive them out to the original source material, to the secondary source material. If we've got material that's been drawn from an archive, from a museum, from a gallery, we want to send them to that archive, that museum, or that gallery, rather than try and recapitulate the whole thing ourselves. And we're finding this is tapping into a rich demand from readers. We have this huge number of readers who are reading about the most incredibly and unexpectedly arcane topics. I find it quite terrifying sometimes, the fact that we are discovering this appetite in the world for very, very specialised information, very narrow topics. The sort of things that the fact that we've got an aggregator pulling this together means that there is real value being obtained by someone in a niche. And this is all produced by a community of volunteers. That community is a very active very dynamic community of reusers and interpreters of the information that archives are putting out and making available. What we do as well as this, as well as producing this large textual project, is we offer this variety of tools for access, for collaboration, for distribution. We've, as well as Wikipedia itself, we have a media repository, somewhat unimaginatively called Commons, which we've been working on structures to start aggregating material in that's opened up by cultural institutions. We have, in the past, worked in a partnership with the National Archives over in Washington to actually build a pipeline to just get material into there as it is being digitized. And we've been working on tools to say, okay, it's hosted on our sites, it's being picked up by users from our sites, not from your sites, but what can we do to gather metadata that you want to know about those reusers? What can we tell you in terms of analytics from that information? We don't, you know, where they're getting it from us, what can we give back to you? We're finding that those tools are offering opportunities for investigation. So we did a partnership with the German Bundesarchiv where we collated information from contributors saying, actually this is wrong, you know, this picture is not of Konrad Adenauer, you idiots. Your photo librarians don't know what Konrad Adenauer looks like. I think that comment was actually in German, but you get the idea. And the volume of corrections we sent back broke their system. So we sort of overwhelmed them with the level of feedback we were getting from users, which is, admittedly, their system wasn't quite expected to cope with this, but it was doing pretty well. And finally, we are offering tools for contextualizing information. So where you've got material, we're building data structures that will allow you to pull in dynamically Wikipedia content, that will allow you to say, okay, someone has spent 100 million hours of labor building all this free text, enhanced information around this from an identifier, from a name. Let's pull that out on the fly. Let's use that to improve the contextual information around our content, make it more usable and more understandable to readers, and even within the context of our own site, help them understand the information we're offering them better. And that's the very quick run through.
I know that you're not going to try to sell you anything. As BBC, we're public service, we wouldn't dream of selling you anything. Steal all your time, energy and attention. Suck away all your will to live by making you spend evenings watching dramas and soap operas. No. That was unnecessary, I do apologise to my esteemed colleagues. So my role at the BBC is to deliver the maximum possible value from the archive, and what that's turned into is an attempt to understand how the BBC's archive could be looked at as a collection of assets rather than a collection of programmes, of old output which people might want to watch. It's not that they don't want to watch it, it's just that I think there's a lot more you could do with it. And once you start thinking about that question, you understand that the BBC has far more than just television in its archive, far more than just radio. It's got things you all know about, the photographs and the sheet music and the documents in Caversham. And, you know, there is a vast amount of information. And it also becomes apparent that the BBC shares an enormous number of problems with other archives. And the work of the BBC's information and archives team overlaps enormously. And whilst the BBC knows an enormous amount about how to deal with audiovisual assets, it knows less about how to deal with textual assets or images and things like that. So there's a great deal we can all learn from each other. And since online distribution is such an important part of the ways in which the BBC works, and increasingly an important part of the way any archive works, what's emerged over the last 2 or 3 years of my work with many different organisations is this idea which we call the digital public space. And the term the digital public space is the least worst way we've come up to describe something. It's deliberately not a brand. It's almost deliberately unsexy. Because if you hear the term digital public space and you're interested, then there is clearly something wrong with you. And that is a good thing because it means you're exactly the sort of person who might be keen to help build it. At some point it might have a better name. At some point it might stop having a name in any sense. Because it's not a product, it's not a service. It is, if anything, an arrangement of shared technologies and standards and processes that will be collaboratively developed and commonly applied that will help us all solve problems we share. So it's not something owned by or developed by the BBC or indeed any one institution. The idea is, how do we think of ways in which we can deliver the principles and the objectives that we share as archives? For the BBC, those principles are its 6 core public principles. And the fact that the BBC has maintained an archive of its activity over the last 90 years
gives us an extra asset we can use to deliver those public principles. But you know, under the Royal Charter, that's all we're here to do, and that's all we're going to try to do. Each one of the institutions represented here has a different mission, but I think each one of us as individuals has a shared goal to make archives more available, to get more use from them. And we all recognise that one way to achieve that, in a world where most of the data that we all deal with every day is digitised and shared over the networks, is to establish common vocabularies, is to have open linked data, is to understand that each of our metadata schemas, is to work together on compatible digitisation formats, and, of course, is to try to resolve issues around rights and authentication and access provisions and provenance and all of those things. So within the digital public space, the core principles are really quite bland. You know? We want to make it easy for people to find stuff, whatever that stuff may be. We want to make it easy for anybody to know, without too much effort, what they're allowed to do with the thing they have found. We want to make it easy for anyone to share what they have found and the things they've done with what they found with other people. And we want everybody to have confidence and faith in the integrity of the organisations where they are finding material and where they're sharing it. You know, and those, I think, you know, should be non-controversial. Once you get beyond that, you get into the bigger principles, you get into the hard technical problems, you get into the hard legal issues, you get into the issues around when something is deposited, what are the rights you have to use it, all those things, and we're trying to address them in common with everyone else. But at its heart, the digital public space is about trying to create an environment within which the fruits of the last 10,000 years of recorded human endeavour can be made available to everybody to use to ensure that those enlightenment values that I care about so much have another 500 or 1,000 years of usefulness. And we'd like you to join us on that mission, because we believe the enlightenment matters and was actually quite a good thing.
Thank you very much. The session is now open to us. Apparently nobody wants to sell us anything, but they do want our time. They want us as volunteers. They want us to help us on a journey. They want us to open up our data. So where is that going to leave us? I'm going to suggest perhaps the first thing we should be addressing is whether we're opening up the data or contributing data. With most of the pitches are heading in the direction of opening up the data, but I think that was Owen's question this morning to Google Cultural Institute. Should we be shifting stuff around or should we be opening it up? And how feasible is that? Can I ask you each to have a pop at that question quickly, and then I'll throw it open to the audience.
In an ideal world, there's no difference, as in it doesn't matter where something lives or how many copies are made of it, because you can dereference the URI to find something you can have faith in. So ideally, you spread it around, you put it in as many places as you want, always knowing you can get to a canonical version, and from that you can have some confidence that what you've got in your hand is the thing you're expecting.
And not the ideal world?
In an ideal world, it's locked away. The different versions are fought from one another. You end up having to pay for stuff. You're unsure which version you've got in your hand. So you need to do it carefully. But you know, you should be able to build the technology so that it matters less.
Contributing is good, but I agree entirely with what you just said. So one practical point, though, is that if you do contribute solely, then some level of opening up locally is probably worthwhile, simply because we do then have something that the external world can point back to and say, this is mine, this came from us, here's our claim to it. And solely contributing to external sources is eventually going to fall down on that.
I think we live in a world where there are destinations and there are channels, and Google Cultural Institute platform is a destination. It's a place where they want to create a primary experience. So it's a trade-off. You can decide whether it's worth participating in that and whether that delivers the kind of value back to you that you would want it to, in the full recognition that you know you won't be getting your data back out again anytime soon in any kind of useful way. So which of these platforms you choose is up to you, but the important thing is to choose strategically based on which adds value in the way that value is meaningful to you. What we've seen in the past is chasing after whatever the latest thing happens to be, irrespective of how it fits with your organization's mission, your marketing strategy, the way in which you want to promote yourself and your information. So I think that the case would be there's this entire world of people out there that want your data. You have tremendous value in that relationship. And so it's to be very selective which of those partnerships you use and how they deliver value back to you.
Apart from the three of us, obviously.
Obviously.
Do you want to take the first question?
Jane Stevenson from the Archives Hub. I think my question is mainly to Bill, but it might be relevant to the others as well. You've talked about the digital public space, and I've heard you talk before, and I'm quite encouraged by the way that you're saying it's not so much about the end destination, it's about the tools, the experimentation, it's kind of a bit of a laboratory. Maybe.
It's like socialism.
Cut the revolution. But what I'd like to know, so yes, you're working with a number of partners, but it's always going to be a certain type of partner that has the resource and the time to get involved in something like that. You talked about kind of disseminating this experience, you know, so how are you going to disseminate the results, the tools, the experience, the knowledge, what you've learned, what's good about what you've learned, what you might recommend? How are you disseminate that to all the little kind of archive repositories all around the country, you know, many of whom can't make it to even things like this, you know, let alone collaborate on those kind of projects?
Well, one thing, of course, we'll have Wikipedia pages about everything we're doing, so you'll be able to find out about it there. And indeed, you know, BBC practice is we make our source code of stuff available on GitHub under open licenses, and that will continue to be the place. So if we're building tools and products or implementations to demonstrate things, they will be made available under the most open licenses that the BBC can get away with, depending on whoever else's technology is included in it. So just as part of the general open knowledge, open access movement, we will participate fully in that. The other thing is that the stage at which we are now, we're definitely working closely with partners who have to put quite a lot of time and energy into working with the BBC, which can itself be a tribulation. The goal is to reach the point where it is low friction, where if you want to make use of BBC metadata or whatever, it's just there under an open license, and so you can just take it. Or if you want to use something slightly more complicated, there's a very low-friction license agreement you can sign that lets even the smallest institution take advantage of those resources. And the BBC, you know, we as the BBC don't have to have anything to do with you. So, well,
in a good way.
In that good, sort of, you know, basically, you know, the BBC can occasionally be a bit like a dementor, right? It can, you know, working with it over a period of time can take away your will to live. Because we want to do things in particular ways, necessarily, and we care deeply about things like editorial standards and duty care and those things. And these are all good and fine things for the BBC, but are not appropriate for all of the partners who could benefit from the thing we do. So we need to find ways to stop that happening and to make it as easy as possible for an institution to take advantage of what the BBC has done without having to do it the BBC way.
Does anybody else want to respond to that question?
Just very briefly. I mean, I'm not sure I'd always agree that it's only certain types of institution and certain scales of institution that can participate in these things. I think we're very nearly at the point where the technical barriers to entry are so low as to be almost irrelevant, and that we're talking about a level playing field within which institutions of different sizes and types have the ability to engage with these things. So that we're kind of growing out from a fairly poor technology base into a situation where there's at least part automated flow of content between all of these different channels.
Okay.
I think that's partly true, but I know there are a lot of archives that have like no access to any kind of technical support whatsoever, you know, so some of them might really struggle to kind of interact with these kind of innovations.
Jeff, I think you had a question next, did you? Somebody had a hand up in that row over there?
Maybe so.
All right, Owen.
This is a question for Andrew, mainly, which is, my background is from libraries as well.
We can have a support group.
I can make a run for it together. One of the things that I'm aware of there is there's been a lot of activity, and I know you've been involved in terms of getting things like library identifiers into Wikipedia, etc. And I've seen some recent activity around trying to embed links to libraries from Wikipedia articles to try and expose collections. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that there's kind of an ultimate competition for real estate on those pages. I mean, you know, we heard a talk earlier about the First World War and archives related to that. It seems to me that if you want to expose your archive collection in Wikipedia, then a page on the First World War, you know, lots of archives will have materials that are relevant. They'll all want to have a place on there, and that's worldwide. This is not just like the UK. How do you see Wikipedia kind of scaling or changing to cope with that kind of demand if it's really going to expose roots to all of these kinds of institutions rather than just, you know, the National Archives?
The honest answer is messily. The
The resolving links to libraries, I think, is this the one that came out in the last couple of days? That seems to be working on resolving, taking a Wikipedia article and resolving that to a Library of Congress heading and then firing you out to whatever you think your local library is.
If you're in America.
At the moment, it seems to support libraries in about 20 states in the US, so the practical value of that for anyone in this room is quite limited. We've actually had an interesting experiment with this before. I don't know if any of you have seen the work Wikipedia does with ISBNs, which traditionally are ignored in bibliographic citation because they're a bookseller thing, they're kind of dull. But we've been using them as resolvers to library catalogues. You click on an ISBN, You go to a landing page, you pick whichever of these 500 library catalogues we've pre-indexed for you, and it will tell you where to get a copy of the book. And even then, we're relying very heavily on things like WorldCat, things like Copac, the aggregators. And I think from an archive perspective, we would want to be going into something like Europeana, something like the various hub sites, some kind of intermediation. Because otherwise, as you say, there's a competition for real estate. We simply cannot list 300. Because even if they're all valuable, no one's ever going to read through them to find the one they want. You know, we don't have that time of readers. And I think solving that sort of aggregator and referrer problem is going to be quite difficult.
And I think also more challenging for archives, which, you know, unlike a library where there may well be a geographical kind of focus, I think a lot of people who want to look at archival material are willing to go and look at it,
yeah.
Right? Rather than thinking, okay, if it's in my local public library, I'll pop down and get it. You know.
Yeah, you care about your local library, but archives are, you go to where the specialisation is. So that's going to be quite difficult to work out. Ultimately, I am hopeful we will work something out, but it's going to take a little while to work through the details of that.
Well, can I just, what's the best way of opening up the discussion on that? From sitting here as an...
I don't actually know. I was sitting on the train this morning looking at that email that came out 2-3 days ago about this library resolver and thinking, I really need to figure out what I'm going to do with this. And I think what we're going to end up doing is debating that for the next couple of months, figuring out what happens there, what model works for the libraries, will that work for archives? Because it could simply be that we just have a thing that says, show us all the archives with collections related to X, weight them in some way, see if that works for the reader, I don't know.
You'll turn into Google if you're not careful.
isn't there that saying that everything is doomed to re-implement the most obvious thing?
Next question.
I've got another one.
Andrew, can you tell us a bit more about the commons dimension that you were talking about?
Yes.
What is that exactly?
It's
heaven.
We have Wikimedia Commons, we call it, which is a repository of 15 million media files. I say media files, it's something like 95% photographs, because historically we've not been very good at handling audiovisual. But 15 million media files, all of which are guaranteed to be freely licensed, either under a liberal Creative Commons license or in the public domain, or under something functionally equivalent to one of those two statements, all of which is available for use and reuse. We're trying very hard to get the metadata on that up to a high quality. So user-contributed metadata, as I'm sure many of you know, is often pretty terrible. But we're now working on making sure that where we've harvested this from somewhere else, where it's come from a library, come from an archive, come from an external donation, that we have very good metadata, that we're actively pushing people back towards the original resource, the original repository, we have all the relevant file numbers, all that sort of thing. So that's what we've got and what we're offering. The material in that is surfaced through Wikipedia, through other sources. We've also recently launched what was originally a sort of commons for data, we're calling Wikidata, which is an attempt to produce linked open data from basically Wikipedia. We're trying to take the 9 million topics, entities, concepts we have represented in Wikipedia, build a reliable CC0 data structure around them, and give that away to the world in some way. So we don't yet know what the exciting reuses for this are going to be. We launched it 2 months ago. If you think you can do something interesting with it, go and have a look and see what's out there.
Okay, thank you. There's a question at the back somewhere. Did I hear?
Wikimedia Commons is the go-to place for photos to illustrate your presentations. No, absolutely.
We're very, very good on European monuments right now.
This is kind of a question for Bill, but maybe for Nick as well. There seems to be a bit of kind of jam tomorrow about some of these. If all of the things that Director General sort of 7 or 8 years ago had said about, oh, we're going to, you know, you're going to be able to watch the BBC's archive had come true, then I would be able to watch them saying that on iPlayer. But I have to go to YouTube to see a clip of Director Generals from years gone by making those claims. How do we know that over the next sort of 7 years the same thing's not going to happen again? I'm getting a little bit...
Give me your money. Oh, you do anyway. You pay a television license. That's fine. So that's great. Thank you for your contribution. Keep on paying, and that will certainly help. Historically, things have been said which were not necessarily grounded in the reality on the ground. If I may, Television Centre is closing this month. We leave in 8 days' time. So the BBC's main production hub in London is shifting to Broadcasting House. And it's a fantastic building, built in 1960, you know, and it will be redeveloped. And they do guided tours of Television Centre. And shortly after I joined this in this role at the BBC, me, Rowley Keating, who now runs the British Library, but was then Director of Archive Content, and a couple of others, went on the guided tour as punters, just to have a look around. And the person takes you on the tour and stands you in the centre of the donut and points to the statue of Helios and says, yeah, this is the centre. That used to be a fountain. And when this building was built, it was a fountain, but they had to turn it off because the noise kept distracting everyone working in the offices and making them go to the loo all the time. Ha, ha, ha. If you want to see what it looked like, check out YouTube. And at that point, me and Rowley looked at each other and thought, we have to fix this. Okay. So it is a massive problem. The biggest problem with the audiovisual stuff is the BBC doesn't have the rights. Never had the rights. Can't just give it away. What we can do and what we are doing is constructing the metadata in such a way that we can give that away appropriately under suitable licences, so you at least know what to ask for. You then have to go and clear it. So it was never going to be possible just to liberate it, because it's not the BBC's to liberate. It is possible to design a structure which allows the BBC to describe what it holds in a way which will let you search that in a useful way, integrate it with other collections, and then start the process of liberating what is wanted, what is needed for particular purposes in controlled ways. So there is some jam today. The jam today is our shared data model. It's the metadata. It's /programs. If you go to bbc.co.uk/programs, pick a program, put .json on the end of it, you'll see what we've achieved so far. An amazing and important cultural resource.
And to respond to the same question, if I had to characterise the last, say, 10 years of my professional life, it goes something like this. Share your metadata with us and good things will happen. I don't want to share my metadata with you until you can show me good things happening. No, you have to show me the metadata first. I can't, I won't, I don't want to, I'm shy. And so the inertia around us has been astonishing. It's as though as soon as we get into this conversation about who does which bit, we lose sight of the fact that we have a common mission and that nobody's losing anything, that this is about a shared endeavour that kind of produces. So at the risk of saying it's the wrong kind of jam, the other question is what are we really looking for here? I mean, the big jam with Europeana is, you know, if I open up my metadata collection to Europeana, how many people will come back and look at things on my website? And the answer is, as a diminishing return on 30 million digital assets, not that many, in fact. I mean, it's a similar competition for real estate problem. But the jam that's come out of the last 6 years of developing Europeana is increased political profile, the 30 million odd euros a year that comes into the UK from the Europeana ecosystem of funding, the funded trips to Europe to collaborate with people who are facing similar problems, the aggregated influence around the European legal agenda to do with copyright. All of those things are really solid value that are necessary parts of the transition we're making. The problem I have is they're not necessarily jammed today for your organisation. They're jammed today for our industry, and they're jammed today for what we're trying to do for users. But getting each and every single organisation on board with that, I have a team of people back at the Collections Trust who literally have to sit on the phone for 3 days. We've worked it out. It's 3 days per data provider to coax them into the point at which they realise that we're not a threat. And so that massive inertia over the last 10 years has proved tremendously difficult in getting us to a point where we can say to the politicians and the funders, we've done this bit, we've built it, and we have a shared vision of why that's a good thing. Now give us more money and we can build that bit. And so we're just trying to fight our way through that inertia, and it has taken most of a decade.
Is the massive inertia the big players or the little players?
Both, for different reasons. I mean, the little players have better control over their data and are able to make decisions quicker, in our experience. The big players have better access to legal advice and technical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so you're dealing with different problems. What we've been trying to do with our work is take away as many of the barriers or reduce as many of the barriers. So the technology barrier that I spoke of is about integrating tools for data export into collections and digital asset management systems. The legal barriers is about trying to create a benign framework within which people panic less about copyright and look more at rights and engagement and their public mission. And so we can chip away at all of those, but there are different degrees of inertia for different reasons at different layers of the sector. And the big inertia behind all of that is the fact that from the point of interaction through aggregators, through institutions, through funders, nobody has enough money to quality assure all of these tens of millions of records that we're all slinging around the place. So nobody at any level, everybody wants to push it back down on your archive to guarantee that the information you're providing has sufficient integrity and quality. And I don't know about you, but I can't imagine you want to take that job on.
Has anybody started pushing indemnity clauses into metadata distribution? Because as an author and a journalist, I'll often be sent publishing contracts and I'll have, you indemnify us against any consequences indeed. From anything you might write. And I always strike those out because it's the job of the publisher to sort that out, frankly. Because that would be a...
Well, we'll take one more question.
Quickly answer that precisely what issues come up with indemnity clauses. And, I ended up striking them out because it was quite clear they were just confusing the librarians and archivists who were receiving them.
Mm. Yeah.
Although it worried some other people, it worried people at JISC rather a lot, any formal document, but it just phased all the people we were sending them to. Okay.
Good.
So one thing you each want us to take away from this meeting, final pitch. What have we got to do? One thing.
Come with us if you want to live.
We talk about start with 100. Just take 100 innocuous, safe, nice, non-threatening, secure, reasonably quality metadata records and start putting them into, the Culture Grid and Europeana and DPS and Flickr Commons and Wikimedia Commons and discover the issues and the challenges that happen. But you can do this in a very low-risk, low-technology way. We have a spreadsheet upload that will take metadata records from more or less any system into the Culture Grid. There are simple ways of starting simple, thinking big, and the critical message, I think, is from Mike Edson at the Smithsonian, which is to start small, think big, and move, because the main thing is that we're not moving at the moment.
Okay, Andrew?
Start small. Especially if you're a small organisation, you have more or less complete control over what you can do. Use that power. Just try a small example. I was reading a report just on the train this morning from the National Library of Scotland about experimenting with releasing 20 or 25 of a particularly chosen selection of material to see what would happen. If nothing great happens, well, okay, it's an experiment. It took you a morning. If something amazing happens, marvellous, release more. Well,
thank you all. So I've got start small, share and compare. The goal is low friction and the BBC is officially a dementor.
This talk was recorded on the 7th of March 2013 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives, all rights reserved.